Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Thursday, September 10th. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Nicholson Smith. Our producers, as always, are Christian Ryan and Mike Tassoni. Ben, I need you to like tell me if I'm just too in the weeds of this MLB season or if things always happen this quickly. Because it just feels like every day this year feels like a week, and like every week is a month. And like this year has been an eternity, as we all know. But like just this week, just in the last few days, we have had the Blue Jays taking 2 of 3 from the New York Yankees, who are bad now, by the way, to further secure their hold on second place in the American League East. We have had an injury to the club's most productive hitter, Teoscar Hernandez, an injury to the club's second most productive hitter, Rowdy Tellez. Imagine last year saying those would be the Blue Jays' two most productive hitters with 2.5 weeks left in the season. Like the trade deadline when the Blue Jays made a bunch of moves and brought in Robbie Ray and Ross Stripling, Taijuan Walker, that feels like forever ago, dude.
It really does. And I mean, I think that's the last time that we recorded a podcast too. So, I mean, it feels like things are changing quickly. It's crazy. Like this whole year went from like 4 or 5 episodes ago, we're talking about, you know, spring training 2.0 and what's going to happen this season. Will they even play? Now it's apparent they're playing. As you said, we've already passed the trade deadline. Now it's full on into the stretch run. Before we know it, we'll be talking about the playoffs. And then, you know, depending on where this goes, like, the Jays could easily win a playoff series, at which point, okay, this starts to get real. Or they might be out in 48 hours, as you've said many times. Like, this could go really quick. So it's nice to have baseball. It's great. But yeah, this season is totally, totally different than anything we've seen. It feels different. The pacing feels different. I think I'm just as caught off guard by the pacing of it as anyone else is.
Yeah, the playoffs start in 2.5 weeks. Like, that's not a lot of time. And if you look at the conversations that people were having around this team, like just 3 weeks ago, the word playoffs didn't even enter the discussion. You know, the Fangraphs playoff odds were like well below 50%. Now they're up over 90%. So things are changing extremely quickly, but we are seeing a Blue Jays team that's going to have to go forward now without two of its most important bats, Teoscar Hernandez and Rowdy Tellez, which, like I said, it's a crazy thing to say, but those are two guys who have been carrying this offense, who have been productive, consistent in the lineup, have made like real demonstrable changes to their plate approaches and have like made real solid improvements. And, you know, this like small sample of a season was always going to have these type of situations where it's like, hey, you know, I said before the year, like Teoscar Hernandez could win an MVP award if he goes, you know, has a 60 game tear like he did at the end of 2019. Well, he was a legitimate MVP contender when he went down. Rowdy Tellez, like, his strikeout rate plummeted, stopped swinging at crap, was hitting a bunch of homers, was, you know, having a much improved two strike approach. Like, these are big losses for the Blue Jays. Whereas in 2019, if these two guys went down, it would be like, oh, okay, like they'll get by. But like in the context of this year's crew, like this is, you know, this is big stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like even set aside 2019, even if in spring training 1.0 or spring training 2.0, if these two guys had gone down, then all right, like it's not ideal. The Jays want to take a look at them, but they were not viewed as the pillars of the offense that they really became. And it happened quickly. I mean, Teoscar got off to a good start. And even as soon as the first weekend of the season, I think he was leading or tied for the major league lead in home runs at that point, and he just kept it up. So that was incredible. With Rowdy, I think it's even happened in the course of the last, I don't know, 10 days or 2 weeks, like definitely since we last recorded, that he has really taken his offensive game to the next level. And I think that a lot of people realized the caliber of season that he was having offensively. But no question, I mean, these guys were producing in a big way for this team. You mentioned the MVP discussion. I think it's like totally real, and it won't be, he won't appear on ballots at this point in all likelihood, but I have a vote. I'm starting to kind of like, all right, like familiarize myself with some of these candidates, right? I mean, obviously you're Mike Trout's, that requires no prep. You know he's going to be in a top three spot, but like, I don't know. What about Tim Anderson? Like, you start looking at some of these down ballot guys, and Teoscar was, I think, rightfully inserting himself into that conversation, which is pretty crazy to think about. And so it does make it a really big loss for a team that, you know, now you look at their batting order, 5 through 9. We were texting about this with Shy the other day. It's like, that's, man, you start looking like after the top four in the Blue Jays lineup, it gets really thin after, you know, your number four hitter, Vlad Guerrero Jr., whoever it is on a given day. and that's a problem for this team.
Yeah, you look at that lineup from Wednesday night in the series finale against the Yankees. Look, the top's not so bad. Kevin Biggio leading off, Randall Grichuk in the two hole, Travis Shaw hitting third, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. batting cleanup. But as you said, there's then a cliff at number five where you go down to Joe Panik, Jonathan Villar, Caleb Joseph hitting seventh, Derek Fisher, and Jonathan Davis. And like, credit to Joe Panik, who has been having great plate appearances over the last couple of weeks, but you know, Joe Panik, fifth hitter in a, you know, competitive MLB lineup, like in the postseason, it, you know, and look, the Blue Jays were without Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in that game. Like, he had a, you know, a day off, just kind of get him off of his feet. And like, yeah, you know, at the end of, you know, 28 games and 27 days, whatever the number was, like, let's not risk another injury to a key piece. So you add Lourdes to that and it lengthens it out a bit, but still it gets pretty thin in the bottom half of that batting order. It doesn't seem like Teoscar Hernandez or Rowdy Tellez are going to be back anytime soon. I mean, you know, maybe Teoscar for the playoffs, but even that's a little dicey with an oblique injury in the playoffs starting in 2.5 weeks. So like, in my opinion, the Blue Jays need to add to this lineup. Like, they need to add some more thump. Like, this is going to catch up to them, you know, having this lineup and having the bottom half of it not be as good as you'd like it to be, I guess. But I'm not so sure like where that addition really comes from for that club right now.
It's tricky, right? And you can only count on so many breakout seasons in the course of 1 year, and I feel like the Jays have kind of already had their share of them. You know, not to put a limitation on the potential of these guys, because you never know, but Derek Fisher is actually kind of playing well, so maybe he's that guy, and he's obviously shown the ability to hit for some power and to draw a good plate appearance. So that's a good thing for the Jays, but you're not going to bank on Derek Fisher being that guy. I think, you know, you can see flashes of it from Joe Panik, but realistically, he's probably a 700 OPS guy. They continually have gotten little to no offense from their catchers. I mean, I know Caleb Joseph hit that one home run, and Jansen, to his credit, huge grand slam in one of those games against the Yankees.
And a drive! Left side! Danny Jansen with the grand slam, and the Blue Jays have blown it open in the sixth. An absolute no doubter to left center field.
But by and large, that position has been a black hole for the Blue Jays this year, offensively speaking. So I don't know necessarily that the bottom of the order is going to look great at any point this season. But the return of Bo Bichette, I mean, that's going to be huge. And I think as we record this on Thursday, the expectation in my mind would be that he returns sometime this weekend. I think if he doesn't return this weekend, then that something's gone wrong in all likelihood, just given the timeline that the Jays are on. So that's a big bat. That lengthens the order a little bit, but they're still in a position, even with Bichette back, that they're probably using Travis Shaw every day. They're probably using Jonathan Villar every day, Joe Panik most days. And that's really not ideal. I mean, you know, this is a bit of a sidebar, but VR has been thoroughly unimpressive to me as a player. I think Travis Shaw has not hit as well as the Blue Jays probably would have liked. He's had some flashes, but hasn't put it together. They run the risk of overexposing some guys.
Yeah, VR's reputation precedes him.
Yeah.
Were you saying last time that someone told you the quote was, he's annoying?
Right. And at the time I was like, I don't know, like, is this, you know, a compliment or an insult? I think I know which way I would read it now.
Yeah, no, he's a frustrating player to watch, I would imagine. We even saw, you know, Charlie, who, like, it takes a lot for, like, Charlie to get kind of fired up with his players. And we saw him in the dugout in, I think it was Wednesday night's game, after VR didn't run out, you know, a pop fly or something, go over and deliver, like, about as stern of a message as we're going to see Charlie deliver to a player in games. You can tell that, you know, yeah, the, you know, his frustrations are catching up to him a little bit with watching VR. But like, you're right. Catching is a position where, you know, you take what offense you can get, right? Like, you know, I think I don't have it in front of me, the league average OPS for a catcher has got to be, you know, high 600s, right? Like, it's not big, but the Blue Jays have even been way below that, you know, like, it's a little under the radar, but like, Danny Jansen hasn't had the season that he would want to, that the Blue Jays would have wanted him to, you know, and this is like a young guy who, you know, you were kind of counting on to be part of this core going forward. Now the Blue Jays have some question marks at that position. Reese McGuire, when he was optioned, had the lowest on base percentage in baseball, and he had committed three errors behind the plate. And there, you know, I did the hit on the day that this happened. So this has probably changed since then. But on the day that he was optioned, there were like 19 teams in MLB that didn't have three errors from their catchers. And Reese McGuire had three on his own. And it was, you know, costing the Blue Jays runs. And in one case, when he threw a ball into center field, I think it was in the Red Sox series, it like cost them a game. So that's not good. And you just look even on this 40-man roster for like, okay, who are you going to add? And like, what are you going to do to add some thump to this lineup or just to add a new position player look? Yeah, Bo Bichette coming back from injury, sure, that'll be great. But also you manage that carefully. Like if he is not 100% on Friday, like just be careful. Like don't rush anything here. A setback for Bo Bichette right now could be the season. And so all of a sudden, like just making sure that his entry point back to like playing every day and, you know, being the guy that he was and playing a defensively demanding position, all of a sudden that takes on a lot more importance because you don't want to screw that up. But on this 40-man roster, every position player except for Reese McGuire is now currently on the active roster after Billy McKinney was added. Reese McGuire is the only guy on the 40-man as a position player who's not on. So it's like, even if you want to improve from within from the 40, it's not there. Like it's just not an improvement there. So you kind of have to look beyond the 40. And yesterday, Wednesday, when we found out the, you know, what Rowdy's MRI had shown, this is coming, you know, on the heels of Teoscar Hernandez being out. That was the first day where I like very seriously considered Alejandro Kirk. And I I've been on really on the fence about it like for a while, but that was a day that kind of like pushed me to one side of the fence with Kirk when I was like, that might be really the only way that you're going to add some thump to this lineup right now is if you like take a, you know, 21-year-old kid who's never played above high A, but clearly a guy who, you know, has a capable bat and, you know, in live BPs against Ken Giles this past week has been hitting liners off of him. And like Giles isn't himself right now, I'm sure. And like, isn't of the standard that we've seen, you know, when he's been closing up games for this club over the last year and a half. But, you know, I don't know where else you are finding like a actual legitimate influence and impact on this lineup offensively.
There's no shot at it. I mean, even like free agency and, you know, people see Justin Smoke's name, you know, pop up, not that he would have been eligible for the playoffs, not that he was having a good year, but it's like even then, and I don't think they ever got close to having serious discussions with Smoke, who's now a Giant, but there's not much in free agency. So you really are limited in terms of what you can do. Obviously the trade deadline has passed, so it is internal. I think the Kirk idea is intriguing. Like, I guess there are clear pros and cons here, and I'm interested to hear like where you mentioned being on the fence, like where you kind of land on this. But for me, it's almost easier to see like, and I want to watch Alejandro Kirk. So I hope just for pure entertainment purposes that they call him up and he hits home runs from both sides of the plate and fans get to love him because he's going to be a fan favorite. That would be by far my preferred option. But I find it when you're looking at it objectively, I find it easier to come up with the arguments against promoting Kirk than the arguments for, in a sense. So, and those would be 21-year-old catchers never played above A ball, as you said. Yes. So that's a big leap. And you're putting him in a position where it's like, he's supposed to be the savior of this offense. And he's, you know, all he's done is face some live BPs. So that would be the one thing. And then secondly, you're locking up a 40-man spot, which now isn't an issue because you have guys who can DFA. But, you know, in the course of the offseason, we only got 40 of those, and we saw in last winter, for example, the Jays used one of those spots to claim Anthony Bass. So, and now he's a big part of their bullpen. So there is value in keeping that spot open over the course of the offseason. You can do some different things, claim a guy on waivers, take a look at him in spring training. Now that's all future oriented. So there is something to be said for winning in the present. And I guess it comes down to whether you assess Kirk as a guy who can help you do that.
The 40-man is tight right now after you grabbed Sterling and Robbie Ray and, excuse me, Stripling and Robbie Ray and Taijuan Walker, right? So those are like three 40-man spots that you had to use up. I mean, if you know Rowdy Tellez isn't going to be with you again for the rest of the year, you could move him to the 45, probably move Wilmer Font to the 45, like, yep. you know, with the shin contusion, like it, maybe he can get back and pitch for the playoffs, but is he really going to be on your playoff roster anyway? Right. Probably not, you know, giving up a ton of hard contact, like not great results. You move him to the 45 and he gets to, you know, collect his big league pay and everybody's happy, right? You could make the room, I think. The argument against Alejandro Kirk is like obvious, right? 21 years old, hasn't played above A ball, hasn't played like a game, like a live professional game in like 13 months, yeah. 14 months, right? So it goes against everything that the Blue Jays like to do with their top prospects, right? Like that's the entry point is those factors. And plus here's the pressure of like, we're adding you because you're going to hit for us, right? Like we need you to hit. We need someone to hit. You got to hit now against major league pitching, which you've never faced. And you're not in a rhythm and you're not in a good routine. I suppose the counter argument to that would be, do you want to win or not? And are you going to win with the proven commodities that you have now, which like Joe Panik's career is like, you know, pretty proven. Like we've seen what he is. Jonathan VR's career, like pretty proven, right? Like, you know, we mentioned how like this lineup just is not very deep without two of its top hitters anymore. Like I question the Kirk thing when you had Hernandez and Rowdy and like Bo was coming back and you're thinking like, all right, you know, the lineup's fine. But without Teoscar and Rowdy, like you just lose so much thump. It's not unprecedented in MLB to do something like this would be my other argument. You can look to the San Diego Padres and you can look to Luis Campusano, right? And that is a very similar guy. That is a 21-year-old catcher, designated hitter, had never played above high A this season. The Padres called him up and he hit a home run in his first game and then he got hurt. So that's like disaster scenario, yeah. right? But the Padres made that move. So it's not like this is not unprecedented across MLB. It's not like, you know, the Blue Jays would be this front office like, wow, I can't believe they did this. Other teams that are going for it are doing things like this with top prospects. I don't think it's going to happen because I just like don't think the Blue Jays front office operates that way. And I think that they, you know, as you said, like they are going to find so many more reasons not to do it than the reasons to do it. And there is a bit of a deadline with it coming up because per the operations manual, September 15th is the deadline for people to be added to the 40-man and be playoff eligible. So as we sit here today on September 10th, there's 5 days. Either this is going to happen or it's not. But you know the inertia of this is that like the longer that it doesn't happen is the less likely it's going to happen, in my opinion. So even the fact that it hasn't happened yet kind of indicates it's not going to happen going forward. But I mean, Wednesday was the first day where I was kind of like, maybe this is what they're going to do. When you look at the alternatives and you look at the other options, like to me, like Alejandro Kirk might give you the best chance of actually adding some thump to this lineup.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're comparing him to, you know, what he might eventually be, or if you're comparing him to JT Realmuto, I mean, of course, he's not like the idealized version of Alejandro Kirk yet, but that's not really a fair comparison. Really, you have to compare him to who else you have on the roster, on the bench on a given day. And it's pretty easy to imagine a situation in a game where, let's say, Danny Jansen, who is at the plate, and you're looking for a pinch hit option. You've got Caleb Joseph, Jonathan Davis, and maybe Joe Panik on the bench. Could Kirk be a better option than those guys? You know, or if it's, you know, Joe Panik facing a really tough lefty and you've got that same kind of assortment of players on the bench, could Kirk be a better option? I mean, at the same time, if he's facing a tough lefty, like let's say it's Aroldis Chapman, for example, then you're going to put Alejandro Kirk in against Aroldis Chapman and expect results. So it is this give and take where it's like, I know, I mean, at some point you just have to prove it and you have to test these guys. This yep. is not the ideal way to test anyone, but I can see your point about how, you know, it could be an upgrade. Now, it's not to say that it would be an upgrade, but the Jays bench, the back of the Jays bench right now is pretty thin. So you can imagine a world where he would be a better hitter than those guys.
Yeah, there's like a million outcomes where it's a disaster, right? Where he like strikes out, you know, a million times, or yeah. Hey, he has a really good debut in his first game. Then like Campusano, he gets hurt, right? Like, and then, you know, and then it's like, wow, great. Like, really glad we started that service clock, you know. There's way more reasons not to do it. But, you know, the tendency to be really precious with your prospects sometimes is kind of like, you know, AJ Cole was a top 100 prospect, you know, like Anthony Alford was a top prospect, right? There's like, you know, there's a million cases. And like, in a way, that's arguing against myself because I'm saying, well, he might be bad. And it's like, well, then why? What? He's not going to help if he's bad, right? So, you know, that's is not a great argument, but like, I just think with, you know, compared to the alternatives with the Blue Jays injury situation right now, even in that like game on Wednesday when Caleb Joseph ran into, I think it was Voit playing first base for the Yankees and they had this like really awkward collision and Joseph stayed down. I was like, wow, the universe is really trying to will this into existence right now. Right. But like if Caleb Joseph went down, you know, in Friday's game against the Mets, I still bet you the Blue Jays would just bring Reese McGuire back.
Man, yeah, it's, yeah. No, it's conceivable, even though McGuire showed so little offensively in the time that he was up with the team. It's really reinforcing that what we saw from him last year is, you know, not who Reese McGuire is offensively. And I think we knew that at the time, but certainly that's been reinforced in the last little while. I don't think they'll do it. I don't think they'll do it. I think for my entertainment's sake, I would like to see it.
Yes.
I'm not totally convinced that he would be an offensive upgrade, even over, you know, a Jonathan Davis or a Caleb Joseph off the bench, but he might be. And it would definitely be a lot of fun to watch that unfold.
Yeah, you could fit him on with two other catchers as well. Like, you have DH at bats and first base at bats yep. going forward, right? So you could, like, you can have Vlad play more first base than he has, and DH is wide open. He could just use Kirk to hit. Like, he doesn't even need to really be in behind the plate if you're concerned defensively that, you know, the game calling. And, like, and that's an important part of it, right? Like, I'm not calling Alejandro Kirk up to, like, play catcher every day because it's game calling in the major leagues is hard, man. Handling a pitching staff is difficult. So, you know, I would think it would be more so those DH at-bats that are now being vacated with Rowdy Tellez likely being out for the rest of the year, but it's probably not going to happen.
Well, they definitely have at-bats to go around. There is no question about that. I mean, when you look at the state of the lineup right now, there would be no issue finding reps for a guy like Kirk and getting him in there. So I think, yeah, in all likelihood, we're looking at this offense and this is what they have. So it's more so going to come down to, you know, can Bichette come back and can he be that guy that he was for the first few weeks of the season? And they're going to need their remaining guys to stay healthy. You know, maybe that means working in some more off days for them. I know they've done that. I think you have to keep doing that. I know it frustrates some fans. I think it's the right thing to do. You have to keep these guys healthy because they're not in a position where they can afford any more injuries.
Yeah, it was the right thing to do over the last week, especially as they were like wrapping up that, you know, 20 games, 27 days. Like you saw the toll, right? Like Teoscar Hernandez, it's a soft tissue injury, right? Like, you know, Rowdy Tellez takes a weird step and his knee goes out, right? Like these things are like related to the workload and to the toll and how much these guys have been playing. So, you know, I know people were, you know, a little upset that Lourdes Gurriel Jr. wasn't in the lineup on Wednesday. And I was like, hey, if there is any reason that guy needs a day off, give him the day off, because losing another like good hitter in this lineup is going to be really, really bad. So, you know, I think we'll see it similar going forward, maybe not to the same degree. Like the standings are going to say something about it, right? Like the Yankees continue to fade. I doubt the Blue Jays are catching the Rays, but I don't know. You really shouldn't say anything in this season because, like, I don't know. I doubted the Blue Jays were going to be a playoff team at all this year, and I doubted the Blue Jays would catch the Yankees for second in the division. So who knows what's going to happen? Maybe the Blue Jays will win the East. But, you know, I think that if the standings continue to kind of, you know, solidify the way that they have been so far, yeah, the Blue Jays can be a bit more cautious with it. But they lose five in a row and the Yankees surge and all of a sudden it's like you're, you know, competing with Detroit again for, you know, eighth place in the American League, then it's like, okay, now everybody's got to play. So I do think that like the results in the standings are going to say a lot, you would hope, in you know, how much players are playing, how many rest days they have down the stretch.
Totally agree. I mean, if you run into a situation where the playoff berth starts to become perilous, then you have to change the way that you're managing. On a lot of levels, I think that it means fewer off days for guys. It might mean going to certain relievers more often. You definitely have to be more aggressive in that situation. Thankfully for the Blue Jays, that doesn't appear to be where they are. And, you know, I don't know where you land on this, Arden. When I look at the difference between, you know, being the number five seed and the number seven seed or eight seed or even winning the division, I don't really see the incentive. And this is part of the problem with the structure more generally, right? If you were to extend it beyond this year, and part of the reason the teams like the Dodgers and Yankees didn't really do much at the trade deadline, but it's like, I don't see what the incentive is to really, you know, go all out just so you can be the five seed. Like, am I missing something there?
No, with a three-game first round, like, objectively bad teams win three-game series all the time.
All the time.
Which is why I kind of wish the MLB went with the let the top four pick their opponent thing. Or I guess it would only be the top three who pick it, and then the fourth would be stuck with whoever was left. I liked that idea.
Of course.
Especially in a, like, three-game series setup. Like, you might as well. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you finish first in the American League, you still got to win a three game series. It's in your home ballpark, which, like, great, but you don't get to pick your opponent. Like, you don't know who's coming in. If they come in, they're hot. If you run into, you know, the Blue Jays might go into wherever they're going. Hyunjin Ryu shoves and Taiwan Walker shows up and has his best start of the year. And all of a sudden it's like, oh crap. So yeah, I would have preferred that they went that route with the pick your opponent thing. That would have, like, given a bit more incentive to those top four teams.
Just think about, like, if this was a reality show, like, do you ever watch those, like, really bad reality shows where it's like, you know, they're trying to scale some building or accomplish some task, and they would have people, like, choose one another within the show as a way to create intrigue. And, you know, it's kind of obvious when they do it within the show, like, why they're doing it. And it doesn't necessarily, like, land all the time. But I think in Major League Baseball, like, if they were to take that turn toward being a bit more of a reality show, which, like, let's face it, they're entertainment too. Like, they're competing along with everything else to try to entertain people. Then, and it literally could be a show where you're drafting your opponents and the GM has to announce his pick and justify it. Like, I think it would be fun. I think it actually would be kind of fun if you're going to have this type of, you know, eight teams make it per league. Then I can see the case for that.
Yeah. Like, if you're the Dodgers, do you select the Giants, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, assume the Rays, you know, win the American League, like, would they take the Yankees, who are, like, fading bad and not playing good baseball? That would seem like a strange decision, right? Like, just on paper, not knowing, like, you know, how teams have been playing. If, like, you're going to take the Yankees, like, that's a really good club. Like, you're going to run into Garrett Cole and, like, who knows? But then also they're not playing well and they don't look good.
Absolutely. They don't look good at all. And even right down to some of the players that they're giving reps to at this point. But I mean, even if you think about it as a reward for the teams, then it just gives that team a little bit of extra leverage to make their own decision. So then the Rays actually get a bit more of a prize, because if they want the 8 seed, great. If they want to play the 2 seed for whatever reason, they can make that choice. So it actually, like, beyond the entertainment factor, it actually does provide some sort of incentive for the teams that finish atop their league.
No doubt. Let's step away, but when we come back, there is plenty of pitching matters to discuss as we continue on At The Letters. All right, so Ben, let's go to the playoffs, and it's a three-game series, and let's say, you know, the Blue Jays, let's take a look at it right now. Right now, the Blue Jays would be playing Cleveland. So, yeah, perfect. Blue Jays, they're going to Cleveland. They're going to play that team in the playoffs, three-game series. Hyunjin Ryu starting game one, obviously. Hopefully, you've been able to line it up, right? And, you know, the way that the schedule is played out, you're able to not pitch him in that final series of the season. Who starts game two for you?
Well, I think Taiwan Walker would start game two, and I would have the bullpen ready by, you know, the second inning. The, you know, not necessarily going to warm guys up for the first, but I'd have guys, like, make sure you're fueled up on coffee. Don't get too comfortable there in the bullpen, because we might be calling on you in the second or third inning. Like, basically, if he has a night like he did against the Yankees where his command just wasn't there, then you got to make a move. You're pulling him and you're going to the bullpen and just relying on those bullpen arms. What about you?
Like, I'm going to jump into the deep end of, like, the way the Blue Jays are constructing their pitching staff and the way that they're getting outs this year. And I'm going to, like, open with Julian Merriweather.
Yeah.
Just as, like, hilarious against Cleveland. Right. But, I'm hoping for 6 outs, right? If he only gets me 5 and I have to bring in, like, Ryan Brocky to get a tough lefty, that's okay. I'm opening with Julian Merriweather, and then I'm going to, like, either if Thomas Hatch matches up better, or if, like, Anthony Kay's stuff plays really well against Cleveland's tendencies and their swing planes, and I am like Milwaukee Brewers-ing my way through that second game, and I am keeping Taiwan Walker in my back pocket as my game three starter in case things don't go well for me. And this is also based off of, in this like world, I'm assuming the Blue Jays have won game one. If the Blue Jays lose game one, it's like throw your best stuff out there in game three. Like, if Taiwan Walker is your best chance at winning by your own internal like data and everything else, throw them out there, right? I'm not holding anything back for game two, but I would, if they won game one, I would try to like bullpen my way through game two and then have Taiwan Walker in my back pocket for game three. If you win both the first two games, you might be starting another series like within a couple days. I might want Taiwan Walker to start the first game of that series.
Yep.
And I know that like you should always try to win the game that's in front of you and you should never really like manage for tomorrow. Right. But I think that with the way the Blue Jays pitching staff is constructed, that is the way that I would lean.
Interesting. I wonder, like, I'm almost tempted. So I'm like pretty convinced by what you're saying there with Merriweather over Walker. But I almost wonder if I would be more likely to do that if they lose game one as opposed to winning it. I mean, if they won game one, you might be kind of tempted to go with Walker and just, you know, see what happens, push your luck a little bit. Whereas if they lose, if they're in an elimination game, I just think Merriweather's stuff is better. And I think hitters are responding in a way that really reaffirms that and backs that up. And so I think Merriweather is the better pitcher in a short burst. Now, he's not going to give you 5 or 6 or 7 innings in the same way that Walker might. So there's a difference there. But in a short burst, I think Merriweather has the more electric stuff. So if they're facing elimination, I'm convinced by your Merriweather reasoning. I would actually go to him if they're down 1-0.
Can you imagine like 2 innings of Merriweather? And it's always easy to draw this stuff up in your head, right?
Yeah.
When the game starts. But 2 innings of Merriweather and then like 3 innings of Hatch, or I don't know, like two and a third of Hatch and like an inning and 2/3 of Brocky, and then like an inning of Nate Pearson.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, coming back in relief, like I could not be more excited to see Nate Pearson in a 1-inning burst. Like I thought that we were never going to see this, right?
Yeah.
That Nate Pearson was just going to be a starting pitcher going forward. And he was going to have to, look, starter, you got to keep something in the tank. You don't really go max effort. Like for Nate, that's sitting nearly like 98, you know, touching 99 and 100. Nate Pearson in a 1-inning burst could be crazy. Like the last time Nate Pearson did that at the Arizona Fall League All-Star game a couple years ago, he threw 104. So Nate Pearson in a 1-inning burst this year, if he's healthy and if he's just going max effort and airing it out, which I think he will be, we might see some crazy stuff in that situation. Yep. So, you know, you should never look forward to anything in the year 2020, but part of me is like really kind of looking forward to that.
Oh yeah. It is one of those things. Like even the scenario that you outlined, right? It's a really be careful what you wish for situation, because you know, you're lining up Ryu. Okay, great. Well, guess who Cleveland has in that situation? They've got Shane Bieber, who's probably going to win the Cy Young. And then game two, it, you know, is not going to be a bullpen game for them. It's going to be Zach Plesac or Carlos Carrasco or, you know, like Savali. Like they have so many guys that even after trading Clevinger and Bauer, they have so many really good starting pitchers. That's a scary team to face in the playoffs, not offensively, but just from a pitching standpoint, even more so than some of the other playoff teams. Like I think Cleveland could be really scary.
Taiwan Walker starts game two for you. Does he see the lineup a third time?
I mean, no way. No way. There's no chance. No starter other than Ryu in the playoffs should face a lineup a third time. Like, no way.
Tanner Roark disagrees with you.
Well, yeah, but Tanner Roark's not managing a Major League Baseball team. And I appreciate, I appreciate Tanner Roark's thoughts and his perspective. And like, we always say this, and it's true, I appreciate when athletes are honest with their perspective. And Tanner Roark was absolutely forthright and honest when it came to his views on pitching. And I actually think, man, when you're looking ahead to 2021, you're looking at next year, He's right. Like you cannot be too cute with managing a pitching staff when you're trying to grind through 162 games. It is not a good idea. You need him going out there and shoot. Well, Shoemaker's a free agent, but you need your starting staff to eat innings. And he has made a career of that and he provides real value. But it's just right now at this point in time, it's not what the Jays need him to do.
Yeah, there are so many reasons why this season in particular, we have seen across baseball, it's not just the Blue Jays, across baseball, teams very reticent to let starters, you know, see a third time through the order. And like part of it is 2020 context, right? Part of it is shortened season. Part of it is shortened lead up to the season. So you don't want to be really careful with like durability. Part of it is expanded rosters, right? So you got, you know, these like 10, 11 man bullpens. And so you have the options of more guys to go to. Shortened season, you don't necessarily need to save that bullpen as much as you would in prior years. Part of it is just the context of baseball in the last few seasons, man. This is a trend that has, did I say it last time? Like nobody's going to give you a Sabre award for saying you shouldn't let a starting pitcher face the lineup a third time. Like we've known this for a very long time. Like the stats are very clear when you just look at it MLB wide. Batting averages go up, slugging percentages, ISO, runs, ERA, everything, man. Like every weighted on base, everything goes up the third time through. It makes sense. A pitcher is fatigued. He's now at this point faced 18 batters, right? And if that's, you know, 3-4 pitches per plate appearance somewhere in there, even if you are cruising along, like you've still thrown 70-80 pitches, man. Like you're still fatigued. You've been up and down a bunch of times. Your adrenaline's gone down. Like your energy stores are down. You're probably not quite as crisp and effective as you once were. Like it's so rare to have like the Justin Verlanders of this world who gets stronger as the game goes on. Like, you know, if every pitcher could do that, every pitcher would. The hitters have seen you. Like they've seen your stuff now twice. So they have a good idea of how it's performing on the day. And they've been not only like seeing it, but they've been watching, I guess they don't do this year actually, but they've been watching video on you in previous years of the previous plate appearances. So they kind of know like what your stuff looks like, and they're able to kind of make the adjustments of like, oh, hey, when I got the fastball in my first plate appearance, like I was just under it. Let me just kind of change my plane a little bit and let me make that little tweak. That's why guys kind of get barreled the third time through. Like it's obvious. I appreciate Tanner Roark's comments just like you do, because yeah, I want athletes to be honest and I want them to be forthright, but you know, the Blue Jays have an incredibly strong case for what they're doing this year. In a lot of ways, they've kind of constructed their roster so that they, you know, you don't have starting pitchers facing a lineup the third time through with the Hatches and the K's of this world and Merriweather and Baruchy, like all these guys who would have made the AAA pitching staff, the AAA starting rotation in a normal season, who wouldn't even be here, right? Which speaks to your point of during a 162 game season, things aren't going to go this way. Like Tanner Roark will be the guy who he has been throughout his career, who's very valuable to a pitching staff in that he like regularly can give you 5 to 7 league average innings, right? He can regularly eat up innings. He's very valuable in a 162 game season. In this 60 game one with expanded rosters, it is different. So I feel like Tanner probably understands that. Like, I think he just wanted to kind of vent a little bit. 28 games, 27 days. Like, everybody's upset and tired and angry. Like, it's just, you know, everybody needs a little break from baseball. It's been a lot of baseball. So I feel like he understands that. But, you know, the case is pretty clear for why the Blue Jays and most MLB is doing this.
Totally. And I think if someone came to me, you know, if one of our bosses at Sportsnet was like, hey, Ben, like, different year, like, our game stories this year are going to be 250 words. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of used to writing like a bit more than that. Like I'd really like to have the chance to explore, tease out some different ideas and maybe offer a bit more, you know, perspective or context or whatever it is. If our boss has just said like, no, like that's it. We only want you for 300 words. That's all we need from you. It would be jarring. It would require a different approach to how I write. And it would definitely, it would be difficult, I think. So I can understand that. But at the same time, the Blue Jays value what Tanner Roark brings. That's why they paid him $24 million and signed him for 2 years. Like they very much do value that. It's just right now they don't need it.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing. Roark's been allowed to face the a lineup the third time earlier this season. It didn't go well. He gave up a bunch of hits and runs and had to be like bailed out of innings. Like he's had that opportunity this year. It didn't go very well for him. The Blue Jays in general, even while they are like a team that lets, you know, sees the third time through like the least in MLB, they've still gotten crushed any time that it has happened. Blue Jays pitchers, starting pitchers, third time through an order this year have a 10.53 ERA. It's only 19 and two-thirds innings, but still, that's a league-leading ERA. Batting average, 359, leads the league. OBP, 422, leads the league. Weighted on base, 449, leads the league. Leads baseball, not just league, baseball. Yeah. So like, even like, why? If you're the Blue Jays, if you're Charlie Montoya and Pete Walker, you've tried it and you've seen that this does not go well. Your front office doesn't want to do it. Your analytics folks don't want to do it. You got all these arms in the bullpen that you can use. I mean, you were just trying to put pitchers in the best situation to be successful. right? Like, you know, and I'm sure that is the way that Charlie and Pete are framing it. It's not we're keeping you away from certain things. It's we're putting you in certain things where you can do well. As I like wrote and we talked about, like this, you know, the Blue Jays starters not getting deep into games. A lot of people were upset about it. It's not a bug. That is the feature of this pitching staff. It's been constructed that way. That's what's going to happen going forwards. And as we were talking about earlier, we get to the postseason. I would not be surprised if we see one of those kind of funky, quote unquote, bullpen games where the Blue Jays kind of, you know, use several pitchers to get through their 27 outs.
Yeah, I like the idea, especially like in that first series when you're going to face, I mean, game two will be either an elimination game or a must-win game. Someone will have to win that game. So you're talking about leverage from the very beginning. It's not a sustainable strategy if you're doing this, even for a seven-game series. I don't think you can do it. But for a wild card game, I mean, it's almost the default to have a bullpen game for the wild card game, unless you happen to have an ace lined up and for good reason. And this is only a really, you know, a small step away from a wild card game. So, you know, the more we talk about this, I really don't think if the Jays are down 1-0. I don't think you start Shoemaker. I don't think you start Roark. I don't think you start Walker. I think it should be a bullpen game. I think that's maybe if you're up 1-0, you roll the dice on a starter, a traditional starter. If not, then if you're down 1-0, then to me, I would go bullpen game. And it does, you know, it raises a question for a lot of these pitchers like a Chase Anderson or Tanner Roark or Matt Shoemaker or Taijuan Walker. I mean, what's their role? Are they just there to pitch if the Jays are up 4 or down 4? I mean, considering their, you know, level of expertise and experience and pay in a lot of cases, it feels a little incongruent. I'm not saying that's a reason not to do it, but I don't know exactly what the role would be in a shortened series, but, you know, that's probably getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
Well, and what is their expectation going into their outings, right? And like, how do they work in between their outings, right? So like, you know, and Tanner kind of made that point to us last night of like, well, you know, when I go out there, like, I don't really know, right? Like, I don't know that I'm not going to face the lineup the third time. Like, I don't know if I should like be more aggressive early on or hold more back. Like, when I see the third, like the leadoff hitter coming to the batter's box third time, like, as you said, it's questionable as to whether I'm going to get to face him or not. I could understand how that would be disruptive to a pitcher's routine, and particularly like between starts. You imagine guys like Hatch and Baraki and Merriweather, guys who have been, you know, starting pitchers their entire lives. Like, they're having to, you know, adapt to completely new routines, like not certain how often they're going to pitch. It changes how you lift in between, how you stretch, you know, when you throw sides, like what you work on, like your recovery, like all these things, right? Guys who are used to an every 5 days or every 6 days type of thing. Now it's like, hey, you know, Anthony Kay, you might be pitching like every other day or every third day or something like that. I understand that is like an adjustment, but this season of all seasons has to be treated, and especially from this point forward, as if it's the playoffs already. And it's just like, hey, you might be called upon. Like, you might be going in, you know, like you need to be ready to go in. And when you go in, your focus just needs to be get outs and like get outs and be aggressive as long as possible until we take you out of there. Like, just go in and get dudes out. Like, that has to be the approach now. Like, we've seen it in the playoffs in the past, and pitchers have spoken about it of like, yeah, you know, I put myself aside and like, I, you know, Clayton Kershaw, pitch and relief, you know, or whatever, right? Or like, yeah, Kenley Jansen, I'll come in and get like, you know, 8 outs, yeah, save or something, right? Like, you kind of like put your routine and all your own stuff aside. I just feel like that has to be the mentality now going forward, because of the realities of this season.
And as much as the Jays have some reinforcements coming back in the form of Giles, potentially Pearson, Shoemaker, all those guys are making progress, they are still down. You know, Jordan Romano's not pitching for this team right now. Probably not expecting him back this season. If he does
seeming
come back,
more and more unlikely.
Yeah,
I think coming back.
Yeah, it would have.
He hasn't started throwing yet. We got 2.5 weeks till playoffs.
It's just not enough time, really. Yeah. I mean, maybe if they play deep into the playoffs, you never know. But even then, you know, it's a bit of a leap. So I don't think you're counting on him. And even with Giles, like, you've seen so many closers do the Andrew Miller thing where they end up, you know, coming in with one out in the eighth and they just keep pitching, or Jansen, those extended outings at times. I don't think Ken Giles is going to be positioned to do that at this point, just given issues that he's had with his elbow. I know you're trying to win games, but you also owe it to this player who's on the brink of free agency to treat him with a certain amount of caution. And so I don't think you can be asking Ken Giles to do, you know, 40 pitch outing over the course of two innings. Like, I think pretty much he's got to be a one inning guy who doesn't pitch two games in a row. Like, I maybe I'm being overly cautious there, but I think you're pretty close to that. You have to be pretty close to that just out of respect for Ken Giles.
Yeah, John Gibbons used to call it abusing guys, right? Yeah. In the bullpen. Yeah. And like you bump up against it. The Blue Jays have bumped up against it with like a lot of guys over this last little bit. But a lot of that's just their schedule, right? Like they played a lot of games in not that many days. And they, as we've mentioned, have starters that they aren't letting go very deep. So they've had to use a lot of relievers. But I mean, I like Anthony Bass, man. Like, it was, you know, there was a while there he pitched like five times in 8 days, you know, and they would like, you could see it in the stuff, right? There is a decline in the stuff. He got through his innings, but you could see he was clearly not at his best. You can look it up on Fangraphs. You can look up like the pitcher usage, you know, last 7 days, man. Like, Sean Reed Foley's thrown 97 pitches, Hatch 58, Merriweather 58, Cole 58, K 56, Dolis 56, Yamaguchi 82, Font 44, and he's on the IL. And that's part of what Tanner Roark is talking about, is that like the bullpen's exhausted. Yeah. These guys are really tired. And it's part of what you're talking about, how about it's not sustainable over a full season. And it's also part of what you're talking about in that you want to do right by these guys and you don't want to impact their durability going forward, impact them, you know, the next year. Like, we've seen several times, you know, Ryan Tepera, look at what happened to his career after he logged some very heavy innings loads, you know, like, what are you going to say?
He's pitching leverage for the Cubs. Yeah, watch out. I've been watching a lot of Cubs games these days.
But, you know, we've seen it a few times, you know, in Toronto where guys just got like used a lot. And then, you know, the next season, they're not themselves anymore, man. Like, but I don't know. Maybe part of that's just like being a reliever in baseball, right? It's a fine balance, man. Like, I don't know how you manage like the push pull of that the Blue Jays are trying to right now. This off day couldn't have come at a better time. And the one after the Mets series couldn't have come at a better time. But, you know, from that point forward, the Blue Jays basically be playing every day until they're not allowed to play anymore because they got beat or they won a championship. So it's going to continue to be something the Blue Jays are going to have to manage as they, you know, spin out this season.
Totally. And I think if you get to the point, I mean, if they have a week left in the season and they're 4 or 5 games up on the number 9 seed, essentially on the team that's trying to claw its way into the playoffs, I think at that point in time, then you really, maybe Tanner Roark will get his wish, actually. I mean, at that point, maybe you let Chase Anderson, Tanner Roark, and Taijuan Walker have them go 8 innings, and then you really let the bullpen have a break. At this point, you're still trying to win games. So I still think you have to be extremely cautious when it comes to third time through the order. You have to use your bullpen. It's there for a reason. Those guys are effective. You're straddling that line between, you know, what's just an occupational hazard of being a pitcher and what's too much. But I think they're doing that right for now. They would love to get to the point that, you know, 4 or 5 days remaining in the season, each guy gets one tune-up outing, you know, let's say on the Friday or Saturday, and that's it. You just kind of rest them and you let the starting rotation at that point do its work.
You got to think, like, if you can line things up the way you want to, you won't even have Ryu pitching in those last 3-4 days of the season, 5 days of the season anyway. And that's your one guy who really does log like a good amount of innings. That's the one guy that you feel comfortable letting, you know, get all the way through a lineup of the third time. So you're not even going to have him. So, like, yeah, you might have to be like, all right, like, here you go, Tanner. Like, go get those outs, buddy. Like,
the complete game.
Go, hey, here you go, Diesel. Like, go show the manhood, right? Like, all those things that you're saying. Like, it's your time now. And then you might not be on the playoff roster.
Who knows? Right?
If I'm the Blue Jays, here's what I'm doing for the foreseeable future. I'm lining up Hyunjin Ryu to pitch every 5 to 6 days. Like, I'm not necessarily waiting for the rotation to take a full turn. This is what you paid the guy $20 million to do. Be here, be an ace. Pitch every 5 days, give you a really good chance to win a game. Like, we've seen how the schedule, you know, how the standings have turned very quickly. Like, I don't think that the Blue Jays are at a point right now where they can really necessarily put things into cruise control. By the end of the season, like, if things are crystallized, then fine, definitely back off Hyunjin Ryu. But for the next, you know, week and a half, I am keeping him on an every 5, at most, every 6 day turn.
Interesting. I like the sentiment. I think when with Ryu, just knowing how last year he was much more effective when he was on a 6-day rotation, had 5 days of rest, I would keep him on every 6 days. And even with that, you know, if that means disrupting other guys in the rotation, totally fine. I agree that Ryu and getting Ryu into the game as much as he possibly can has to be a priority. He's been great. Just a great pickup, it looks like, for the Jays, and a big reason they are where they are. So I would have him every 6 days, no matter what. That's kind of where I would land on Ryu.
With Walker as well?
Yeah, why not? Right. I think he's their second best starter right now. So yeah, I'd keep Walker on that rotation as well.
And then, so somebody is going to suffer there, right? Like, that means Robbie Ray not starting, yeah. Ross Stripling, no, we've already seen, not starting. That might mean, like, Chase Anderson not getting starts. Like, there's going to be, like, there are downstream effects to that.
Yeah, and I think you live with that. I think that's totally fine. If the Blue Jays were to go, I wonder where you land on this, because it's not clear to me who the Blue Jays' third starter would be, you know, behind Roark. You assume Walker's kind of the two. Yeah, maybe it's Roark. Shoemaker, I don't think would be stretched out enough.
No.
So I don't think it's him. So it's Roark or Anderson, I guess.
Shoemaker in relief is going to be a weird thing too. Like, I don't even know what to expect from that. Like, you can kind of see what to expect from Nate Pearson, but like with Shoemaker, like, when's the last time that guy ever pitched in relief?
Right. No, it's got to be a while. And they already have, Shun Yamaguchi stretched out to give you bulk innings in that role. So yeah, it is unclear, obviously a lot of unanswered questions, but that's one of the reasons I would kind of go, if you don't have a clear number three, then to me, I would go, you know, Ryu, then Walker, and then bullpen game, and not necessarily in that order. But I just think that's the way to go with this composition of this staff.
I would also approach the bullpen in such a way that, like, if I have a seventh inning situation that Ken Giles matches up really well with, and it's like a one run lead or a one run deficit, I'm throwing Ken Giles. Like, forget saving him for the ninth. Like, I'm also not having a closer going forward, because you know that Bass can do it. You know, like, I don't know. If there's like two really good lefties coming in the ninth, I'd throw Baruchy in that spot, man. Like, there are guys on this roster that you know can do it. Dolis can absolutely do it. It'll take an hour, but he'll absolutely do it.
Yeah.
So like, I, going forward, will just play bullpen by matchups and not necessarily have roles, which, like, obviously the relievers are going to hate that, just as like Tanner Roark and Taiwan Walker, like, hate that they don't see a lineup the third time through. But it's just the way that I would manage it if I were running that bench.
Yeah, and these guys want to win. I think the relievers will get it. I don't think that'll be an issue. It's amazing. I mean, you look at Baruchy, and he was rested in his most recent appearance, which was Wednesday night. He comes out throwing 97 inside to Brett Gardner. I mean, this stuff is impressive. I guess, and he's absolutely going to be pitching in leverage. There's no question about that. But, you know, I have a little bit of pause with him, just with the command doesn't seem to be there, especially with some of his breaking stuff. It's like, he's walking too many guys. The pitch is up. No one's connecting with him. So, I mean, those are kind of the base runners he's giving up. But I'm not, like, as much as he can be a dominant pitcher, there's still some reservation there. You know, if you were to bring him into a situation with base runners, for example, is he going to walk the bases full? Is he going to walk a run in? Those questions would come up for me.
I just think about, like, who else would be kind of like your big lefty matchup?
Right.
But you're kind of saving Kay for more extended outings. Down the stretch, it's a little different, right? Maybe Kay can come in and just face a couple hitters, right? But like, when I think about, like, all right, big lefty bat coming up, Ryan Brucki is kind of my guy in this bullpen.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you compare him to, you know, Aaron Loop is still pitching and still going with the Rays. It's like, I'd way rather have Ryan Brucki, you know, even if Loop's not going to walk guys and Loop hits guys. So it's kind of the same thing, but they're different styles, obviously, and different looks for the hitters they're facing. But I think Baruchy, all things considered, you love what he's giving you. It's just, you know, it's not quite a totally finished product, I don't think.
Last point I want to make this week on At The Letters is I hope that everybody is, like, enjoying what's happening right now, the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, it's family. Because, you know, look, we get into the weeds of everything and, you know, like, you know, nitpick at the batting order, you know, like bullpen usage and this and that, and like Tanner Roark's unhappy and da-da-da-da and injuries, whatever. But, like, the Toronto Blue Jays are in second place in the American League East. And the Toronto Blue Jays are going to be a playoff team. Like, they are actually right now not just, like, contending for the playoffs. They're like competing for a better first round, like a more favorable first round matchup. Like that's the air that they are breathing right now. Last year, this team lost 90 games. You know, the year before, this team lost almost 90 games. Like this is the good stuff. Like this is what you enjoy as a fan. Like Blue Jays are a playoff team playing meaningful games like here in the middle of September with like 2.5 weeks left in the season. This is it, you know, and you hope that it's going to be better, obviously, as a Blue Jays fan. Like you hope that, you know, Jordan Groshans and Alejandro Kirk are going to, you know, show up and like, you know, bolster this lineup like further, and that the Blue Jays are going to be a sustainable winner going on. But like right now you have like a playoff team, you have winning baseball being played, exciting baseball being played, a team that like I think you can, as a, just looking at it from a fan's perspective, you can really easily get behind when you look at, you know, some of the personalities and some of the like ways that they're winning games and the deficits that they're overcoming. And I hope that like fans aren't getting too like bogged down into the weeds of like, oh, I can't believe Charlie did that, or like, oh my god, like, you know, they're bringing in this guy in this spot. Like your team is winning. This is the enjoyable part of it. And in, you know, a month from now, you're probably not going to have it.
Yeah.
So I would say like, this is a, you know, you need to be enjoying this right now.
Great point. Great point. I think when you kind of zoom out and you think about where were the Blue Jays expected to be or where were they last year? And then now here they are just laying waste to the Red Sox and Yankees. You know?
And Fisher gives this one a ride right center field, and he's hit it out.
Just right? Totally out. Like they're way better than the Red Sox. They're just, their pitching is just so much better than the Red Sox. And they are, I mean, they're have a better record than the Yankees. They're winning games against the Yankees. The idea, you know, even a couple weeks ago, oh man, they're gonna have to play the Yankees 10 times. Like that's gonna really shake the Jays to their core. Well, now they're 2-1. You know, they still have more games to go, but it's certainly not this like this behemoth that they couldn't possibly beat. I mean, they're playing competitive baseball against them. So definitely good point to kind of reset and appreciate that, because, you know, when you think about next year, who knows what the playoff situation is like, right? If you have to be a top five team in the American League again, as it's been for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years, that's a much bigger challenge. And it might be one that's out of the Blue Jays' reach, depending on how the season goes. We're seeing a team right now that's going to be in the playoffs. That leads to some really fun conversations. Like I enjoy the you know, debate around who should be on the playoff roster. Who should they start in game two? That stuff is really fun. I hope the fans can, you know, find their own questions to kind of grapple with in the course of the next couple weeks, because it will go fast too. I mean, once that series starts, it's going to go by really quick. So it's definitely a good chance to kind of enjoy and just say, all right, this is a weird season. They're making mistakes, but at the same time, they're winning way more games than they're losing.
Yeah, look at like the conversations that we're having right now about playoff rosters, right? But yeah, how are you going to set up the rotation, and like, you know, what's the batting order going to look like in the playoffs? Yeah. Last September 10th, TJ Zoik started for the Toronto Blue Jays and went 4 1/3 and gave way to Buddy Beauchears and Justin Schaefer, and then Derek Law and Tim Mayza. The day after that, Wilmer Font started the game and threw 2 innings and gave way to Trent Thornton, who all of a sudden had to pitch behind an opener, and then gave way to Jason Adam and Ryan Tepera. I mean, like, you just go through the game logs, man. Last September 14th, Jacob Wagasback started, went 3 2/3, gave up 3 runs, gave way to Brock Stewart, who gave up 6 over 2 innings pitched. What were we talking about last September? None of these things that we're talking about now. So like, well, whatever, you know, I'm not gonna tell anybody how to enjoy anything. Like, enjoy things however you want, man. Like, you're your own person. Like, you know, just like consume things however you want, whatever makes you happy. But like, I do, it is nice to kind of like zoom out every once in a while and be like, hey, like, Blue Jays are a playoff team. Just a year ago, things did not look quite as rosy or favorable as they do now.
Jason Adam also pitching leverage innings for the Cubs, by the way. They're just picking up those scraps off the Jays reliever bin.
I wrote this like high spin fastball thing like a week ago, and Jason Adam's like a top 10 fastball spin rate guy. in baseball. Wow. Which maybe it dawned on me last year and I forgot about it. But I was like, oh, this is why the Blue Jays like this guy. Like, this is why they kept giving him opportunities and why they like brought him in, because super high spin fastball guy. The Blue Jays clearly like that. Look at Thomas Hatch. Look at Joey Murray. You know, like, these are high spin fastball. I think Robbie Ray or maybe Stripling, one of those guys, is a high spin fastball guy too. So that's like an interesting little like trait that the Blue Jays are clearly looking for in acquisitions. But go ahead, sorry.
No, totally. I think you're right. And I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, enjoying it, of course, people have to make their own choices there. And it's not to say that the Blue Jays are playing perfect baseball. Their base running has been extremely frustrating to watch at times. Like, really, it has. And I think also, you know, it's not to say that Charlie Montoyo, who, by the way, is probably going to win manager of the year. Like, he's going to. Now, do I think that he is necessarily the best manager in the league? You know, we'll save that for another podcast. But I think he's going to win manager of the year. And and yet he has made decisions that we've talked about, whether it's, you know, Biggio hitting eighth or Teoscar Hernandez hitting eighth. I mean, those, in my opinion, are the wrong decision. But he has, big picture, kept this team in it. And yet, if you want to look at those decisions closely and second guess them, that's fun. Part of being a sports fan is second guessing the coach and manager. So great, go for it. I mean, that's fun too. But yeah, don't lose sight of the fact that this team is winning a lot of games.
You like blew my mind when you texted me that like a week ago or something. Like, Charlie Montoya's going to win manager of the year. I was like, wow, you're so right.
He is.
Like, you are absolutely right. Yeah. But if anything, like, and this is a whole nother discussion, but like, it just kind of exposes the flaw of that award and the flaw of us as baseball writers voting on that award. Because I don't watch every team as closely as I watch the Blue Jays. I've seen every single one of Charlie Montoya's decisions this year. I've looked at every lineup. I've looked at every bunt, every pinch hit spot, every pinch run, every bullpen like game, everything. I've seen it all, but nowhere even close to that on any, but pick another AL manager of any other guy in the AL. So like, if I had to vote on that award, which I don't, like, I got Cy Young this year, man. Like, that's easy. Like, yeah, thank you. Yeah. I could do that, right? But like, having to vote on like who's been the best manager, I have no clue as a baseball writer. I have no idea. Even like, there, you know, I even don't get to see like 92% of what Charlie Montoyo does in a day, right? Like, we talk to him every day and we get to see him, like, you know, call it manage a game, but so much of being a manager is what happens in the clubhouse behind closed doors and in meetings and, you know, just handling personalities and players. So none of us really have a good grasp on who a good manager is.
We really don't. Like, it's, I understand the historical significance of the award, and so I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. But to me, it's almost like it's kind of a step away from us voting for like bench coach of the year or bullpen coach of the year. You know, like, if someone gave me a ballot for bullpen coach of the year, I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know what they do, right? I don't observe what they do on a daily basis. Like, they obviously have a lot of responsibilities. They have a lot of work. They have to work with pitchers. Charlie has a lot of responsibilities. It is not an easy job. I can tell you that much about being a manager. It is a very difficult, taxing, multifaceted job that you require a ton of skills and experiences for, but it's hard to assess one against the other from afar. It really is.
Yeah, like, I don't know what Ron Gardenhire's in-game decision making has been like, you know.
Right.
Like, yeah. I watched the Angels at the beginning of the season because they're an interesting team with interesting players, and they fell off the map. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe Joe Maddon's making amazing in-game decisions, but, you know, for whatever reason, like, they're just losing all the time, right? Like, it's the obvious thing that like everybody does is just look at, okay, expectations versus outcomes, right? What did you expect this team to do? And then what was the outcomes? Nobody expected the Blue Jays to be a playoff team. I didn't. Nobody expected them to do particularly well in this season when they didn't have a home at all for the first few weeks. Then ended up playing in a AAA ballpark the players were all salty about, right?
Yeah.
And then they're going to look at the record and be like, wow, like, this is great. But, you know, if the fact that the Blue Jays have gotten like really good performances from, you know, Thomas Hatch and Merriweather and et cetera, you know, Teoscar Hernandez and Tellez, like, is that not more of a credit to the front office? The last thing we need to do in baseball is like, you know, deify front offices any more than we do. But like, is that not more of a credit to like player acquisition, right? And to getting Thomas Hatch for a David Phelps, right? And for trading for Teoscar Hernandez and sticking with him when it looked pretty grim. with him and when he was getting like demoted and when he wasn't doing well and saying, no, there's something here. This guy's going to put it together. We believe in the player. Is that a more of a credit to like player development and to, you know, your pitching coaches for the pitchers, right? Who brought Thomas Hatch in and were like, why aren't you throwing a changeup? Throw your changeup more, man. Like, you know, Shun Yamaguchi, who in his first two outings is like a disaster. And then, you know, Pete and Matt Bushman start working with him more. And it's all of a sudden he turns it around because he's using his stuff differently and attacking different quadrants of the zone. Like, I just think the award itself is just completely antiquated.
Shocking that the BBWAA would be accused of being out of touch with maybe the modern baseball climate. But again, a topic for another podcast. Maybe I don't want to get myself in trouble here.
I know. Should it be like the like organizational award or something? Like, I don't know what to call it. It's like, I don't want to say like, you know, best GM or like best front office. Like the Yankees for taking Gio Urshela and turning him into what they turned him into, right? Like,
yeah.
There should be an award for that, for like really wise like waiver wire pickups and, you know, get minor league free agents in the off season who turn into something, and like, you know, guys who you know, you stuck with organizationally, like in the, you know, the Hernandez you know instance, you know, even like Grichuk, right? Like having given him that extension looks fine now, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
When the Blue Jays first gave it to him, it was like, but now it's like great. There's got, you know, for those things, there's got to be an award, but I don't even know who you assign it to, because like modern MLB franchises, it's not just like one guy with, you know, 29 media guides like, oh, what about this guy? Like, it's so, there's so many people who are involved in that. So I wouldn't even know like what to call the award, but that's what I think it should move towards rather than manager of the year.
Yeah. Or even it could just be as simple as, all right, like there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. It's all super important, but maybe we'll just add reliever of the year, because relievers are, you know, becoming a more and more important part of the game. Let's vote on the best reliever in baseball and just have that be a separate thing from Cy Young. You know, just throwing something out there for argument's sake.
No, let's get Liam Hendricks an award. That's
sure.
That's what we need to do.
He's been awesome. Speaking of former Jays relievers, watch out for Liam Hendricks over the last two seasons.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. That's At The Letters. My name's Ryan Zwelling. That's Ben Nixon Smith. Our producers are Mike DeSoni and Christian Ryan. Talk to you next week on At The Letters.